One of the most celebrated but highly controversial public artworks was unveiled in the nation's capital exactly 1 year ago. The Vietnam War Memorial, constructed from polished black granite, lists the names of over 55,000 Americans killed in that war. The debate over the memorial centered on whether or not to amend the original design to include a statue. What part does art play in our public places, and how can the public be a part of the decision-making process? I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Welcome to Frankly Speaking. With me today to discuss art in public places is Dr. Lorraine Brown, coordinator of George Mason's Center for Government, Society, and the Arts, and Jerry Clapsaddle, professor of art at George Mason University. Welcome to Frankly Speaking, Lorraine and Jerry. What exactly is public art?
Well, I think maybe the best for us to use as an example to illustrate public art is the European Cathedral. I think everybody's probably familiar with the sense of awe that a European cathedral produces in the spectator and the participant. But the development of the cathedral is interesting because I think they were discovering that the development coincided with trade centers. Sometimes a cathedral is used as a magnet to draw people to a particular area, either through something obvious like a pilgrimage or just the merit of the art itself. So in the case of a European cathedral, we find art serving a social and economic function beyond what most of us sense today. I think we all can have that immediate response to the beautiful stained glass window, the soaring space, but probably few of us are aware of the economic impetus for the development of those cathedrals. I think today we find in a democracy that we haven't yet defined the nature of what public art can be in this country. We find in our culture perhaps that we've used European models, and to some degree the patronage system has been changing in this country from the robber barons who open their mansions to the public, the display of in those mansions of European models of art. Today we have more self-confidence in our own vision, and we've experimented to some extent already.
I think it's exciting to think that there was a model for the artist meeting the public in the 1930s. Now, it had to come out of a depression, but the idea of the WPA arts projects was that the artists had a stake in the politics of the time. Depression was happening to them as well as to the rest of the population, and the idea was a kind of second renaissance might occur, not the Emerson or Thoreau, but this time it would be the artist in the 1930s meeting the American public where it was, and they had a common dilemma, a common problem, and with the idea that if the artist was painting a mural, people would watch that process, comment on it, and would in that way participate, and the same way in the theater project as well. So there are very good precedents for the kind of collaboration I think we're trying to achieve today.
Now, the WPA was funded with taxpayers' money.
Yes.
Are public art projects normally funded with taxpayers' money?
Or in this country?
Yes.
I think in most cases they have been. We find the instances where the city of Seattle, for instance, has led the nation in their program, where they've designated 1% of all new construction is spent not only on bricks but on art. So in that sense, growing out of the WPA experience, we find local government, federal government, and state government beginning to have as a public policy the patronage or the commissioning of art for public places. I think there are 11 states now that have a percentage tied on to state construction that's designated for art.
What about the state of Virginia? I understand there have only been two public art projects approved for the state.
Two funded by the National Endowment for the Arts.
I see.
I come from the state of Iowa, and I think we have 8 or 9. So I think per capita, Virginia is a little bit behind, and it's unfortunate that in the state of Thomas Jefferson, where the model began quite early, and even with George Mason, the bringing of an architect in 1755 as an indentured servant from London to design his space for him in Gunson Hall, that we haven't followed that model throughout the development of Virginia.
Does public art have a responsibility?
I think we're beginning to see that responsibility. I think in the Vietnam Memorial and the controversy around it, we began to see that the vision of an individual artist, the expressive vision, can serve a public need if it matches it. I believe that the problem there arose out of the artist claiming that she did not have a political vision. It certainly was a personal vision, and probably sprang from an emotional interpretation of the war. But to the extent that that did not match the public's vision, the diversity of that vision, we had a controversy. I think, too, then there's some backtracking in the panel that chose that particular solution. So the whole process of deciding what is serviceable, what is appropriate in a public space, I think should be re-examined.
Does that come, in your opinion, from the whole matter of size with that memorial? It's surrounded by gigantic monuments, and some of the controversy came out of the fact that it was not white, which public monuments are supposed to be, and it was low to the ground.
Right.
I'm struck by what you said about a cathedral, the fact that, again, this is something towering and is moving upward, and certainly that Vietnam Memorial is doing something quite different.
Yes, it certainly didn't seem to raise or elevate the aspirations of those involved with the Vietnam War. I think it was a memorial in the sense that we normally think memorials should be. It wasn't a monument to public service. It was a monument to public strife and public sacrifice. And to that degree, I think everybody agrees that the experience of going to that memorial makes profound the sacrifice that these individuals, whose names are inscribed on the memorial, have given to this country.
What part does the public play in the decision-making process?
I think a university is a proper place to examine decision-making process. And in the process, of course, we educate ourselves in various ways, not only about the aesthetics of public art, but about other issues that we might not have, I'm speaking as an artist, been concerned with. To go back to the cathedrals, there wasn't really, I don't believe, a great issue there involved with church theology or the function of a church or a cathedral. In the Vietnam Memorial, I think there was, at the very beginning, a controversy as to the nature of what a memorial should do, particularly in the mall, and in contrast to the other memorials that we have. In this project, to go back to George Mason, we felt that there were two distinct functions for public works of art on this campus. As at Gunston Hall, there was a need for public places. George Mason himself had to stay at home a lot. There was a need for that public entrance to the mansion, the sense of majesty about it. Although it's not a big building, the approach to it is significant. It's a public experience. The gardens behind provide a place for private contemplation. So it seemed that in a university we have those needs as well. We have a need for art that would act as a magnet, as a cathedral does, to draw people to a particular place, a public congregation. And once one walks into a cathedral, we have the need, as we do on the campus, for private contemplation. So it seems that throughout at least Western history, we've had those two different functions for public art, for public congregation and for private contemplation. And the university seems a proper place for this to happen.
What we did on this campus in the first phase of the Art in Public Places project was to educate ourselves. Now, I'm not talking about Jerry now, but the rest of us on the committee.
Me too.
And we did go down to the Hirshhorn Museum, and we did spend an afternoon looking at the slides of, I can't remember what, 100 artists were.
I would think so, yeah.
And we had consultants talk about the work, and we had an opportunity to see on that afternoon and just an enormous amount of beautiful work. Certainly our own tastes were different, but that first step was an education. Then we did, on a succeeding day, come together as a group representing the community, the faculty, the administration, the students, and began to make our own selections from among that great quantity of material that we had. And the give and take that day, the way in which people would have their own insights and we could share our ignorance, our insights, our strengths, I think you could see the panel grow. And the consultants, again, who came back that second day, were surprised that we worked so well together. There wasn't the great divergence of taste or opinion, and we didn't fight with each other. It was my sense that we were learning from each other. And of course, we hope that that will continue. We did have, I think, given that spring is a very difficult time of the year on a college campus with exams and whatever, when the artists came and showed their slides, we did have a faithful group of faculty and students who continued to come and said, this is just wonderful to have the experience of listening to the artists, seeing the slides, talking about it afterward in a discussion period. So I think the valuable thing for us, as well as the joys, just plain joy of meeting the artists, is to have that community experience.
One last question. I'm alluding to something that you mentioned, the fact that George Mason has selected six national artists to prepare proposals for public art projects, and they've all visited the campus and they've practically seen the blueprints for the George Mason of the future. Can you share with our audience what kinds of things they're thinking about? What are the considerations, since George Mason is only 11 years old, and the fact that we have artists who will be working with architects?
One thing in the art world that's been talked about a lot in the last 2 years is that it seems the cutting edge for development of the discipline of art has to do with the work of artists together with architects. From the beginning, that we no longer plunk art in the center of a square, and that in fact is what we use as a term, a derogatory term, to call the statues that get placed in places that are built by architects. And hopefully that statue doesn't block the view of any facade that the architect made. And also then the artist with that ego that comes into a space and perhaps is not that sympathetic with the space itself or the function of the space. So we have some issues here that we in the discipline have to deal with. It seems that the artists that we've selected, all of whom have done a number of public works, many of those works at universities, have seen the opportunity at George Mason, since we're less than half built, to provide, for instance, a reading garden. Another is the sense of entrance. A local artist, Jim Sanborn, is interested in constructing a portal image. A number of the artists who are not local have tried to find what is available locally, whether it's brick, stone, landscaping materials, to use local supplies, local materials for their work.
Well, thank you, Lorraine and Jerry, for being on Frankly Speaking. My guests have been Dr. Lorraine Brown, coordinator of George Mason Center for Government, Society, and the Arts, and Jerry Clapsaddle, professor of art at George Mason University. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassane Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening. Today we've been talking about art in public places. My guests have been Dr. Lorraine Brown, coordinator of George Mason's Center for Government, Society, and the Arts, and Jerry Clapsaddle, professor of art at George Mason University. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guests or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening. Today we've been talking about art in public places. My guests have been Dr. Lorraine Brown, coordinator of George Mason's Center for Government, Society, and the Arts, and Jerry Clapsaddle, professor of art at George Mason University. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening. Today we've been talking about art in public places. My guests have been Dr. Lorraine Brown, coordinator of George Mason's Center for Government, Society, and the Arts, and Jerry Clapsaddle, professor of art at George Mason University. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public service program produced by George Mason University. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Michelle Lassay Montgomery for George Mason University, the state university in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening. Take four. Take five.